now our feature presentation.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. We're taking a pre-4th of July holiday and looking back at a program we really loved from last month. Wonder Woman's stock has only continued to rise since our glowing review.
Diana.
Fighting does not make you a hero.
What if I promise to be careful? Just a shield then.
Diana.
No sharp edges.
Be careful of mankind, Diana. They do not deserve you.
You've told me this story.
What made Wonder Woman such a hit? Why did it take so long to turn the comic into a movie? And how well did the film depict everything Wonder Woman represents? Fair warning, we will be discussing this movie spoilers and all, so if you have not seen Wonder Woman yet but you want to, you can listen to this conversation later online at the1a.org. That's the word the1a.org. Joining us for the hour is John Horn, the host of The Frame, the daily arts and entertainment program at KPCC Public Radio in Los Angeles. John, welcome to 1A.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is Anne Hornaday, the chief film critic at The Washington Post. She is the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Anne, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And here with me in studio at WUNC is Laura Boyes, the film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art. She is the co-host of WUNC's Movies on the Radio. Laura, glad to have you with us.
Thanks a lot.
We already got a lot of reviews from our listeners, many of whom loved the movie, including this listener who left a message in our inbox.
I'm Emily from Tallahassee, Florida, and I give Wonder Woman a 5 out of 5. I never liked the old Wonder Woman of TV. I felt like she was parading around in a bathing suit. But last night, I watched Wonder Woman. I watched this from first to last, a woman basked in the same cinematic glory as countless men before her and felt surges of pride at her unmitigated power and brilliance. When it was over, I burst into uncontrollable tears. I'd finally experienced the joy of identification with an undiminished hero. I didn't know what I'd been missing until I felt it, and it was more than I could bear. I wept with pure happiness. Thank you, Wonder Woman. I've listened to male reviewers who are confused and elated over wanting to be Wonder Woman. But women know exactly how that feels. That's been our experience for decades. If we wanted to be a powerful superhero, we had to want to be a man. Not anymore. Thank you, Wonder Woman.
Wow. Thank you, Emily from Tallahassee, for sharing that review. And Hornaday, let me start with you. Emily said, I didn't know what I'd been missing until I felt it. What was your reaction to the movie? I think I had a similar reaction to Emily. I didn't even know that kind of a movie was possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I think Emily put it so well in terms of what a psychic breakthrough this is in terms of that identification and how powerful that is. And I think for many male film fans, they take so for granted that protagonists are cut in this sort of white male normative mode and how very exclusionary that is and the sort of mental and emotional gymnastics audiences have to do in order to sort of internalize that. And I think we saw the flip side when somebody makes an all-female Ghostbusters and the howls, you know, of woe that went up among male fans. It's like, well, welcome to our real world, you know? I mean, this has been our reality forever and ever and ever. And so, yeah, I'm just thrilled by Emily's observations. They were all incredibly on point.
Yeah, not just howls of woe, but also some nasty flaming and trolling on Twitter against
True.
Actresses like Leslie Jones as well. Laura Boyes, the expectations for Wonder Woman going in were kind of low to an extent. Warner Brothers has had a really rough go of its DC Comics adaptations, and it seemed like people were really putting a lot of pressure on Wonder Woman to not be what some of its predecessors had been.
And you could see that by the trailers, because each trailer was different. Is it going to be an origin story? Is it going to be an action movie? Is it going to be a romance? Which led me to think, wow, they really don't know what movie they're even making, which was kind of alarming.
Yeah. What kind of movie do you think they ended up making of those trailers?
I think they did a synthesis of all of those things in a pretty successful way. I mean, women are so used to saying, oh, look, here's a woman, but she's only a sidekick. She's only a girlfriend. She's, something completely side to the main plot. And seeing Wonder Woman fiercely at the center of her own story is something that we don't often get to see on the screen.
There was also some anger, Laura, with the way that some recent films, superhero movies, had depicted female characters, like Scarlett Johansson's depiction of Black Widow in Avengers Age of Ultron. She was kind of a sidekick, had this very raw side story. I don't want to ruin it if you haven't seen Age of Ultron, because it's otherwise a great movie, but there was also kind of talk as to whether or not these female superhero characters could break out of that kind of a storyline.
Well, I think one of the things that I particularly loved about this movie was that Wonder Woman was not sexualized in the way these female characters often are. There's no cleavage. You know, she's not wearing underpants like previous incarnations of Wonder Woman. So she was not being presented to the male gaze in exactly that way. She could be a badass warrior in her armor. But she didn't care what you think or if you think she's desirable or not.
And she did kind of have that line with Chris Pine when they're in the boat where she's like, oh, yeah, we know that men are necessary for procreation, but not necessary for pleasure. And he went, okay. John Horn, I understand you spoke to the movie's director, Patty Jenkins, for The Frame. Here's a clip of what she said in which she seemed to be pretty surprised by how positive and how personal the response to Wonder Woman has been. Listen.
I was absolutely hoping to have a very intimate relationship with a certain amount of people who understood I'm trying to do something specific and hopefully meaningful and powerful. I didn't expect it to have that relationship with as many people as it has, and I also expected more kind of tiring negativity of like details. I sort of thought it would be this issue or that issue or that, you know, this detail or that detail. But really, in general, I've been so grateful that people really want to talk about the deeper issues at play instead of the plot details.
That was the movie's director, Patty Jenkins. John Horn, tell us a bit about Patty Jenkins. What's her background and how did she come to make Wonder Woman?
Well, very slowly, I guess, would be the answer to the second part of your question. I mean, I think what she experienced is what so many women directors go through, and that is she succeeded with a film. It was called Monster. It was in 2003. Charlize Theron won the Academy Award for her leading role in it. The movie was critically well-received. It was a commercial success. It was an $8 million movie that grossed more than $60 million worldwide. It was in 2003. Wonder Woman is the second movie she's directed. She went 14 years without directing a film. She worked in television. She pursued some other projects, but she couldn't get her movies made. And now, Wonder Woman has been in development since 1996. There have been a bunch of directors attached to it. They've come and gone. Some were men. Most were men. There were some women who were contemplating directing it. But I think the way she got the job is she came in with a pitch that was resilient, that made sense, and it was what your caller Emily described, and that is she was going to make a straight-ahead movie. It wasn't going to be like a Marvel movie where everybody's kind of making fun of the fact that they are superheroes. It was not going to be a Wonder Woman who's defined by a man. She was going to be kind. She was going to be powerful, and she was going to be, in some ways, kind of old-fashioned, a straight-ahead superhero, and that was the pitch she made, and that was the movie that I think she ended up making.
We're discussing Wonder Woman with John Horn, the host of KPCC's The Frame, and Hornaday, the chief film critic for The Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies, and Laura Boies, the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Before we're up against our first break, I want to get your five-star reviews. Laura Boies, how many stars out of five and why, briefly?
I give it 4. And I hold back my 5th star because of the incredibly boring action sequence at the end, during which my mind wandered. I thought ahead to what I was having for dinner.
CGI.
And then came back realizing that, yes, the good guy had won again.
And Hornaday, how many stars out of five and why?
Exactly. I echo Laura practically word for word. We actually give a spectrum of 4 stars at the Post, and I gave it 3, and for the precise reason Laura just said, I thought the CGI was dreary, and it just reverted to type during that last half hour. But it was pure pleasure right up until that point.
I think mathematically that averages out to, what is it, 4.25?
Yeah, stars? Probably I give it, yeah.
Five?
I
think about 4.25.
I can call it 4.
John
Horn. 4.5.
Exactly. And briefly, John Horn, how many stars out of 5 and why?
I'll give it 4 for the same reasons, but I'll give it 5 for Warner Brothers making it and hiring a woman to make a movie about a female superhero.
Our conversation about Wonder Woman continues in a moment with Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post, John Horn of KPCC Public Radio in Los Angeles, and Laura Boyes from the North Carolina Museum of Art. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing Wonder Woman on today's 1A Movie Club with John Horn of KPCC's The Frame and Hornaday of The Washington Post, Laura Boyes of the North Carolina Museum of Art and WUNC's Movies on the Radio. Joining us now on the line from Portland, Oregon is Greg Rucka. He has written Wonder Woman comics first a decade ago and now currently. Greg, welcome to 1A.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
How well do you think the movie handled the character based on who she is canonically in the comic books?
I thought they did an absolutely exceptional job of portraying sort of the core of this character that everybody in comicsdom has known about for years and years, and it hasn't really seemed to penetrate the larger pop culture until this moment.
Talk about adapting a story like this from a comic book to the screen. I wonder, and as I understand it, you didn't work on this particular movie, but you may have some insight in terms of what some of the considerations are from taking a character with literally decades of story and deciding how much of that you're going to tell in 2 hours. How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you're talking about the movie's 2 hours and 21 minutes, I think I saw, was the final running time.
Yeah.
And you want to take, this is her 75th year. She came on the scene in October of 1941. That's a lot of continuity and a lot of story. And trying to distill that into something that is going to work within the confines and the frame of what a movie narrative needs to be, rather than what comics are, which are serial soap opera, takes a remarkable amount of effort. I thought they did a great job of sort of drilling down, especially as it is an origin story. That's what this movie was. It was, we are presenting the character for the first time. These are the cores of the character. These are the things you need to know. These are her motivations. These are her passions. These are her strengths. These are her weaknesses. And I really thought that Jenkins and Alan Heinberg, who wrote the screenplay, did a fantastic job. I thought Gadot's performance was amazing. A very difficult character to play well, because it's very, there's a slippery slope of taking genuine naivete in the world, and if you push that too far, you look stupid. And Diana is never stupid in the movie. She's never dumb.
Let's get to one clip from the movie that gets to one thing that a lot of people have praised about this movie, which maybe speaks to your comment about the way that she pursues these values that bring her to help fight in World War I. In this scene, Diana, Wonder Woman, played by Gal Gadot, and Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine, just came out of that war planning meeting where a general basically said, you're not allowed to try to stop the evil plot, and that more soldiers will have to die before the war ends. Here is a piece of that scene from Wonder Woman.
Please slow down, Diana.
That's your leader? How could he say that? Believe that? And you, was your duty to simply give them a book?
No.
You didn't stand your ground. You didn't fight.
Because there was no chance of changing his mind.
This is Ares, and he's not going to allow a negotiation or a surrender. The millions of people you talked about, they will die.
We are going anyway.
You mean you were lying?
I'm a spy. That's what I do.
How do I know you're not lying to me right now?
That's Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and Chris Pine as Steve Trevor. Greg Ruckel, what did you make of the way that Wonder Woman's values came out? She was just laser focused on everything, the entire story, and she was not to be dissuaded. How does that jive with the way that Wonder Woman's story arc played out in the comics?
I think it was beautifully, it was a wonderful crucible reduction of what we try to do in the comics. When you have 75 years of comics, things get lost and get muddied. You know, the publisher pursues different agendas at different times, different writers come in, different artists come in. The character changes. You know, there was a reference earlier to, the character running around in a bathing suit. And that's a pop culture belief that is maintained, even though she hasn't done that for quite a while now. You know what I mean? And the movie takes this core of this woman who wants nothing more to go into the world and do good for the sake of doing good, who's driven by this need, and I thought portrayed it just elegantly. You played a clip from one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and I love how that particular scene ends out.
I do want to get to some more of our audience comments and to some more questions, but Greg, before we do, talk a little bit about Wonder Woman's background. There are a lot of feminist themes for sure in the story, but as I've learned more about the people behind the creation of Wonder Woman, including the man who created the character, this was not accidental. This was the feminist themes that were intended in Wonder Woman were intended. They weren't just kind of happenstance.
Oh, yeah. Everything in her original DNA is very considered. You know, the character's created by a man named William Moulton Marston, who wrote initially wrote under the name of Charles Marston and was first drawn by Harry G. Peter, if I remember correctly. Marston created the character in consult, really, with his wife, Elizabeth, and with their live-in paramour, Olive Byrne. And Diana was created very deliberately. I think there's a quote where Marston says she's meant to be psychological propaganda for a new type of woman who should rule the world. This belief that there was in a male dominated world, a fundamental flaw in the society that these values as embodied by Diana of love and compassion and understanding. And also, you know, people talk about and people love to obsess on the sexual details and the ideas of bondage and submission. But if you can divide yourself from the prurient temptation there, one of the things that's really being promoted is this idea of trusting one another and submitting to one another's needs. And hearing each other. And, you know, of course Diana's going to punch people. Comics are action soap operas.
Right.
But what differentiates the character, and really I think did from the start, is that was never the first move.
She's never driven by angst. There was some of that imagery in there, she does carry a lasso, so I kind of understand the whole, like, connection to the bondage and submission thing, especially in that one scene in Wonder Woman, which we should play a little piece of. Remember when the Amazon women captured Steve Trevor and are asking him who he is, and they're standing around him, and he's on his knees, and he has no choice but to answer. Listen.
My name is Captain Steve Trevor, pilot, American Expeditionary Forces, serial number 8141921. That's all I'm at liberty to... Assigned to British intelligence. What the hell is this thing?
The lasso of Hestia compels you to reveal the truth.
But it's really hot.
What is your mission?
Whoever you are in more danger than you think.
What is your mission?
I am a spy! I'm a spy.
That's Captain Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine, learning the hard way how powerful the lasso of Hestia is in Wonder Woman. Laura Boyce, how well do you think that the movie kept some of the more, shall we say, subversive themes from the comic book in there? Did most of them have to kind of be whitewashed or minimized to make the movie play for a mass market audience, or did you feel like they were still there?
Well, the lasso of truth also refers to the fact that Marston devised the technology for the lie detector, and that was something that he incorporated in his comic book universe as well. I mean, the whole polyamory thing, certainly, you know, the Greek island of all the women warriors. Marston was a very influenced by the progressive suffragettes. His paramour was the niece of Margaret Sanger, the birth control pioneer. So he was deeply immersed in the goals of early 20th century feminism.
Let's continue our conversation about Wonder Woman with Laura Boyce, the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, Greg Rucka, who writes Wonder Woman comics, Ann Hornaday of The Washington Post, and John Horn of KPCC's The Frame. Got a few critiques of the movie from our listeners. Elizabeth emailed, "Why didn't the movie end after the amazing scene where Wonder Woman realizes that evil isn't one person or entity? It's a heartbreaking and amazing moment, but then there's this big CGI fight with one entity who is the big bad guy, and once he is destroyed, the war appears to come to a happy end. The movie should have ended with the moving realization that evil isn't so easily contained." John, what do you think?
I think it's a fair criticism. I think, you know, when you're investing as much money as the studio is investing, they want to give people wanting more. The question is, how much do you give them? How much do you hold back? I don't think that, I mean, that seems, you know, a little nitpicky, but I think it's a valid criticism. One thing I would also add to the previous conversation about comics is I think we should recognize the contributions of George Perez, who rebooted Wonder Woman in the 80s, got rid of her heels, you know, made her kind of look more like an action hero, not a beautiful kind of pinup model. And I think George Perez was very influential in Patty Jenkins' design of the look of the film and the look of Wonder Woman.
Ann Hornaday, what about you? What did you think about that big CGI scene at the end? It sounded like from the beginning, from when I asked you how many stars you would give it, you weren't really loving the CGI scene. But personally, when she stabbed Danny Houston's character in that watchtower, I thought to myself, that can't be the end of the movie. There's no way. There hasn't been any CGI. Nothing's exploded. That can't be the end of the movie.
Oh, see, they've really got you just where they want you.
They do. I'm a sucker for things that get blowed up. I can't help it.
But, you know, I just feel that we have now reached diminishing returns with these scenes. They do feel rote to me. They feel very predictable. They, in terms of pre-visualization software, I think a lot of times they actually are, you know, the cheap, cheesy ones are composed of prefabbed effects and explosions that, you know, they literally can drop into any movie. So I do glaze over now during those passages, and I did during this one. And I think Elizabeth is absolutely right about that, you know, gratuitous ending. And it's not just this. I mean, this is just an ongoing problem. I was just at the Cannes Film Festival, and I sent a little tweet only half facetiously that 2 hours, 20 minutes seems to be the new hour, 40 minutes. You know, I mean, it's like people just have this this compulsion to keep, it's this more is moreism and this one more thingism, and it's a real bane across the spectrum.
You can set your watch on it. You know, I've gotten to the point in almost every superhero movie, it doesn't matter who's made it, that when that final fight starts, I check my watch and start a stopwatch to see how long and how many explosions it'll go.
Exactly.
We know
the people
conclusion.
Making them get bored? That's what I don't understand. I imagine those, you know, hundreds of people sitting at their computers doing the same old, same old. Aren't they bored with it?
Well, but see, and here's what got me, and I understood. Like, I mean, there had to be the big blowed up action sequence in this one, because if you've seen Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman or the trailer for Justice League, like, that's where it's going. You have to have the big scene where everything gets blowed up. But, you know, it didn't ruin the movie for me. For me, the movie did what it needed to do story-wise, and it created a moment where Wonder Woman kind of came into her own. Like, that moment for me that knocked me out was when she said, it's not what they deserve, it's what we believe, and I believe in love. That was it for me. Like, I think I had a similar reaction to another one of our listeners who left a message in our inbox. Listen.
Good morning. This is Lonnie, and I'm from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and I want to give my review of the new Wonder Woman movie. I'd say 7.5. Yeah, I know the scale is 1 to 5, but 7.5. And part of that is because it's high time that we saw a woman take a major role and a major part in an action film. And part of it's because it's really well written, well directed, and incredibly well acted. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Lonnie. I think that was my review, too. And I have to admit, when she said, it's not what they deserve, it's what we believe, and I believe in love, I broke down. I've never cried in an action movie before. I just broke down completely.
I think there's two conversations. The one is, like, how is the film? How well executed is it? You know, what are my concerns about plot? Is it too long? But I think there's a more important conversation, and that is, what does this movie represent in terms of Hollywood? And I think that's the more important and meaningful conversation. Over the last, there's this USC study looked at the top 800 films over the last 10 years. 4.1% of them were directed by women. 4% were directed by women. And there's this whole path to stardom for male directors who make their Sundance movies. Colin Trevorrow does Safety Not Guaranteed. He ends up doing the Jurassic Park movie. Rian Johnson does Looper. He has a Star Wars movie. Gareth Edwards goes from Monsters to Godzilla to Star Wars. Taika Waititi goes from Hunt for the Wilder People to Thor. They make these tiny, well-received, good indie movies, and they get the keys to the kingdom. Women don't get that chance. Patty Jenkins, it took her 14 years to get that chance. So the odds of a woman going from a Sundance movie to a big studio film are slim. They're not for men. And I think that's the more important and more meaningful conversation around Wonder Woman's success.
You know, John, I know we're up against a break in a second, but about a year and a half ago, I had a conversation with Jeff Shell, who's the head of Universal Filmed Entertainment. And we talked about diversity in Hollywood. And I asked him, like, what does it take? And he said it kind of takes getting that first film. You know, Colin Trevorrow does his film and then he gets to do Jurassic World. Or Ryan Coogler does Fruitvale Station and then he gets to make Creed. Once you get that first film, you're in. You get your foot in the door. Before we hit a break, John, do you think that the problem with the pipeline is that not enough female directors are getting their chance to make that first film? Or is it that proven directors still aren't getting the chance after they've made the first film? Where's the gap?
It's the latter. Monster won an Oscar. I mean, there's no other thing that Patty Jenkins could have done with that film. Critical success, commercial success, won an Oscar. Difficult subject material. It's about a serial killer. She clearly has chops. I think it actually requires Hollywood to put a finger on the scale and give women a chance to direct. There's so much of a male bias in the business, and the reason women don't get to direct is that women don't get to direct. They've got to start hiring them to make movies, not just Wonder Woman, but a movie about a bunch of guys. It doesn't have to be female-driven characters.
There's a lot more to discuss with Wonder Woman, and we appreciate hearing from Greg Rucka, who writes Wonder Woman comics, who joined us from Portland, Oregon. Greg, thanks for talking to us.
No, it was my pleasure.
We'll continue talking about the movie and get some feedback from some listeners who thought that the film didn't hit the feminist themes quite right. Stay close. Back now to our conversation about Wonder Woman with John Horn of KPCC and Hornaday of the Washington Post, Laura Boyes of the North Carolina Museum of Art, and of WUNC's Movies on the Radio. Let's talk a little bit about some of the feminist themes in the film. Most of the reviews I've heard have been positive, but one listener left a review on my Facebook page. Amy wrote, meh, 2.5 stars. As the next installment in the comic book hero canon, it's fine, I guess, but Wonder Woman as a feminist manifesto, which is apparently what everyone on the internet is gushing, hardly. Yes, Diana Prince has muscles and can wield a lasso. Super. But that's about all she can do. The writers, the script, the other characters, the genre, they confine Wonder Woman within hackneyed feminine stereotypes. Despite her physical strength, she's emotional and irrational, naive and simplistic, and wide-eyed and awkward. But her character never gets past that. Never comes into herself as physically strong and worldly and wise. Amy, thanks for the comment. What do we think about how well Wonder Woman hits today's feminist discussion, today's feminist narrative?
Well, she's a non-ironic character, and that's something that's really seems very fresh and new. She's not dark. She's not edgy. She's not having any sort of an identity crisis like so many male superheroes do. And it's a tough character because in a way it's like Tarzan, which they even give a shout out to that they find Edgar Rice Burroughs' novels in their little cache of supplies. You know, she comes to the city, it's like stone jungle kind of thing. You know, and that kind of naivete is really hard to portray. And I think I have to give a shout out to Chris Pine here because he makes her her sincerity echoes through him and that his masculinity is not threatened by her and that he is willing to be her equal partner and not put her down. And that is something also that seems very fresh and new.
He also has to kind of figure out that he's going to be her equal partner. He thinks he's going to have to protect her. And then he's like, oh, you kind of have to protect me.
But
okay, that's fine.
He flips around pretty easily, which I thought was really admirable.
Anne Hornaday, what about you? What did you think of how the movie handled these feminist themes?
Well, I think the whole gaze of the movie is a female gaze. I mean, that's a subversion right there. And that wonderful early scene where they've taken him prisoner and he's presumably naked in that bath, and you know, it's kind of a beefcakey moment. And so that's kind of to Laura's point, he so brilliantly leans into the comedy of it and the self-awareness of it, and he was just a wonderful foil throughout the movie in playing up that gaze and having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, we keep using the word naive, and I think maybe to Greg's earlier point, it's not so much naivete as clarity. You know, she just has this amazing clarity of vision in terms of right and wrong and what to respond to and what not to respond to. And she's about direct action. You know, she's not a theorizer or a temporizer. She sees something that she knows is wrong and she addresses it. And that kind of agency and directness, I think, is profoundly feminist.
John Horn, did you get the sense? Oh, go ahead, John.
No, I mean, I think the point is an interesting point to raise, but it's a double standard because we don't say of Thor, is he kind of a leading thinker in terms of male equality and, you know, the position and relationship between men and women and what are his real values? We don't. And I think it's a double standard that we subject Wonder Woman to a test that we don't subject other action heroes to. Batman, Superman, Thor, you name them. So that said, I do think Patty is trying to advance not a cause, but I think she is doing exactly what Anne described, the way she shoots the film, the way that Gal performs the character, and the little moments that she has. She's going to say, this is the kind of person that I think a lot of women would look up to. And I think it's why so many women, and it's not just the callers, people writing columns about how they're moved to tears because they've never seen somebody, even though Gal Gadot does not look like a lot of people, who behaves like they think a woman should behave. And that's being strong, that's being mindful, that's standing up for your values. You could call it naivete, you could call it innocence, you could call it clarity, but she's a fully dimensional person. And I think that's what she was after.
This was also part of your conversation with Patty Jenkins for KPCC's The Frame. Here's another clip where you asked Ms. Jenkins whether she was thinking about what was riding on this movie being a success beyond Warner Brothers and DC Comics' bottom line. Listen.
I tried to just focus almost completely on making the best version of Wonder Woman, but of course you're aware that a lot's riding on it. You know, I think the only way to handle it was to not think about it. But I was aware. And then in the aftermath, I've been extremely aware. And in the weeks leading up to its release, it's been more nerve-wracking thinking, oh my God, I of course the self-interested director who wants your movie to do well wants it to do well. But then the person inside of me who has nothing to do with this is really hoping that the movie does well for what it could say for other people. And that's, you know, that's a lot to think about.
That's director Patty Jenkins, the director of Wonder Woman. John, do you get the sense that Hollywood is beginning to look at female heroines and female leads differently because of some of the movies that have come out over the last few years? I mean, I'm thinking of the Hunger Games trilogy, which was actually a Hunger Games saga out of a trilogy of books. Rey from Star Wars Episode 7, who was just fantastic. And now Wonder Woman, or even Scarlett Johansson's character in Avengers. Is there a shift in the way that Hollywood is beginning to portray these women, maybe with a little more nuance?
Well, I'd say the shift has happened in the last week, and I think that's because of the success of Wonder Woman. I think it's very gradual, and I'm not being flip, because I think you can talk about Ghostbusters, and Patty Jenkins was working on this film when Ghostbusters came out. Ghostbusters was seen as a referendum on whether or not women comedians, women actors could lead a big franchise movie, and the movie didn't work, and so the decision was, they can't do it. But you get a movie like Batman versus Superman, King Arthur, The Mummy, the Tom Cruise movie that's coming out this weekend that's probably not going to do very well. Those movies aren't referendums on whether or not Ben Affleck can lead a movie or Tom Cruise can lead a movie or Antoine Fuqua can direct a period film. Guy Ritchie can direct a period film. They're not seen as referendums. Wonder Woman was, Ghostbusters was, and Wonder Woman passed the test. So I think as things change, it's incremental. You know, a movie like Rough Night, kind of an R-rated comedy with Scarlett Johansson that's coming out soon, will again be another step. I think there's such a reluctance to do something in Hollywood that's considered bold and daring, and casting women in leading roles and having women directors still is bold and daring.
But, you know, it's also true that they have willfully not looked at the evidence, and that goes as far back as Sex and the City, Mamma Mia, Bridesmaids, Trainwreck. I mean, it's not as if we don't have the evidence. It's just that, to John's point, you know, when you do have something that doesn't work or that went over budget mistakenly, I mean, I think Ghostbusters actually did work. It was just made for too much money. But had it been true to its modest budget, it would have been profitable. But it's almost like they're looking for a reason not to do it rather than just looking at the evidence and proceeding accordingly.
So here's what I'm concerned about, and I don't know if I'm barking up the wrong tree, so please let me know if you disagree. I heard a number of conversations after we saw the movie about Patty Jenkins and the fact that you have a female director and she views this kind of with a different eye, and that kind of led to a different approach to the storytelling of it. And part of that makes sense, but part of it also feels inherently chauvinistic, that we would expect a woman to direct an action movie that was more sensitive, more character-driven, had a more three-dimensional female character, instead of just holding that up as a new standard for any director to make an action movie that ticked all those boxes. What do you think of the conversation about Patty Jenkins's gender playing into the way the story played? Is it fair to ascribe that more specifically to having a female director, or is that just the hallmark of being a good director? Laura, what do you think?
Well, if, you know, the weakness of a female director is that she cares about keeping everything at a human scale with characters that you can relate to and a plot that makes sense, I think we should, you know, just own it. If that's what a woman director can do, great, let's have more.
But doesn't that leave the Michael Bays of the world and the Zack Snyders of the world off the hook, where their whole movie can, I mean, the trailer for the new Transformers movie ran before Wonder Woman when I saw it, and it was night and day difference. I was like, oh, I'm glad I'm not seeing that movie right now. Like, it just makes it clear Michael Bay can get away with blowing stuff up for 2 hours and call it good.
Right. And I think, if I may, I do think I agree with both things. I think we reduce women to sort of essential arguments at our peril. But I have noticed with movies, especially about female protagonists, that it does make a difference if there are women writing and directing. And I can point to two examples. One is the first Twilight movie that Catherine Hardwick directed. And I think that by far, if you look at that movie compared to the sequels that she didn't get to direct, that the characterization was much better in the first one. I thought it was a lot more interesting and layered and nuanced. And I think that's also true of the first 50 Shades of Grey movie that Sam Taylor Wood directed. And I think that maybe there is just... you know, again, it's not an essentialist argument about women getting people better or being more psychologically nuanced, but I think that they might just have a better reality check in terms of female experience and expression, and they just bring that to the table along with everything else they bring as an artist. And if you look at pure action, nobody does it better than Kathryn Bigelow, you know, but that's not because she's a woman. It's because she's a great artist, and she's bringing everything about her experience and her life and her aesthetic taste to bear on her projects.
Catherine Bigelow, who directed Zero Dark Thirty.
And The Hurt Locker, the Oscar-winning Hurt Locker.
Zach wrote on Facebook regarding whether Wonder Woman can save the other DC movies. Sadly, I don't think so, but the movie does, in my opinion, make all the Snyder reboots worthwhile. I probably won't watch Justice League, but I would love a Wonder Woman sequel. John, what do we think about the future of these comics movies? How much influence is Wonder Woman exerting on Justice League and some of the other movies that are coming down the pike? And for that matter, is there influence being felt on the Marvel Comics side? They're doing really well, but are they paying attention to this latest DC Comics hit?
I'm not sure Marvel has much to worry about. I mean, they're doing incredibly well. I think some of their movies, like the Avengers movies, are almost incoherent, but I think they're doing a lot of things really well. I think what Wonder Woman has done, and I hope that DC can emulate it, because I think, by and large, the DC movies have been horrible. They have taken themselves far too seriously. They have no sense of joy. They have no sense of purpose. They just seem like they're advertisements for theme park rides. I think Wonder Woman is a straight-ahead story that is not going to be joking of itself. It takes itself seriously, but it doesn't poke fun at the genre. They're not realizing that they are actual superheroes. It's a straight-ahead, old-fashioned story, and I think that's largely what's driving a lot of the audience beyond the fact that it is a female-led superhero story. So I think if DC can learn anything from the success of Wonder Woman, it's that don't be too fancy. Have fun telling your story. Don't take your characters too seriously. And remember, they're people first and they're superheroes second.
Let's get to one more review that one of our listeners left in our inbox. Listen.
Hey, Joshua. This is Ethan Gross calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Gal Gadot, regarding Wonder Woman now, is absolutely stunning on screen. I think she does a wonderful job. The movie as a whole, I think, only deserves 4 stars. 3 reasons for that, Joshua, one of which is it's just too long. The dialogue is also not really well thought out at times, but primarily I think the character development was lacking. I didn't feel any connection to Steve Trevor's comrades, Samir, Charlie, or the Chief, and honestly, I only felt a slight connection to Chris Pine's character, Steve Trevor himself. So I think they could have done a lot more with that. Overall, I'm proud of DC Entertainment for making this heroine-led movie and hoping to see Marvel step out and do the same very soon. Thanks so much.
Hey, Ethan, thanks for your call and your review. Laura, what did you think about the way that some of the supporting sidekicks were portrayed? I thought it was interesting because they revealed aspects of humanity to Diana and kind of began to chip away at her idealism until that moment where it kind of shattered. But what did you think?
And also the fact that they were a diverse group of people who were properly cast, like Eugene Brave Rock playing a Native American and Saeed Tagmugui playing a Moroccan or a North African. My daughter saw this movie in New York City, and she said when that character said he wanted to be an actor, but he was the wrong color,
yeah,
that the audience cheered, that was something that really resonated with them, and it helped bring them even deeper into the movie than they were.
And Hornaday, what did you think before we run out of time about the way that the movie dealt with real life in the world at that time? I remember there were a few reviews that pulled out the fact that they didn't do enough to note where women stood in terms of women's suffrage, for example, at that time. How do you think they dealt with the real world in 1918 in that film?
I thought it was exquisite. I think one of the great strengths of this film is the production design and how much was communicated visually through design. So, no, we didn't have those billboard expository, say, what do you think about the suffrage movement going on right now? No, it was communicated textually. Texturally through the clothing, right. That wonderful suit that she wears. I thought that was actually one of the great strengths of the film.
That was one of my favorite scenes when she's going through women's outfits.
Exactly.
And she finally picks that very smart looking suit. And I was like, yes.
Wonderful.
Because that's a parody of every shopping movie scene in every rom-com where, she makes herself beautiful so a man will love her. And, in this one, it's like, well, I want a suit that I can fight in.
Exactly. Yeah. Her My Fair Lady moment in reverse. It's lovely. It's practical. And you can hide a sword in it. I absolutely love it. Exactly. John Horn, the host of The Frame on KPCC Los Angeles. John, thank you for spending the hour with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ann Hornaday is the chief film critic at The Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Ann, thank you.
Thank you.
And Laura Boyes is the film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the co-host of Movies on the Radio from WUNC. Laura, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or iTunes or whatever app you like. 1A comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.